You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, Clay, so what happened? How many prostitutes have you killed?
12.
And you're wondering why you do it?
I think I just do it for the sense of the power.
Do you have sex with them first?
Yes.
And then what, you strangle them?
Once.
How else did you kill them?
Well, a few times, actually most times with a hammer.
And where do you do this primarily?
I've done it twice in a parking garage, and then the rest of the times on the side of the road.
From the New Orleans area?
Yeah.
Beat them to death with a hammer?
Man.
That usually only takes once in this.
Dude, you gotta have a lot of anger in you.
Yeah.
That was an on-air confession from a serial killer to Howard Stern back in the year 1997.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Caldoni.
And this week, a very, very shocking story indeed. The time that a serial killer called the Howard Stern radio show.
This is by far our most requested show ever, topic ever.
Yeah. And it is an interesting little story because even if the guy was not a serial killer, there's some serious possibilities here, some interesting ones. But before that, you know, I just wanted to say, as far as serial killer confession stories go, I happen to know a guy who actually met a serial killer himself in a bar. This guy confessed everything to him. Yeah. So this is not, yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about, Vincent?
I think I do. I think I'm the guy.
Oh, well, that's right. It is you. Yeah. 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 So you want to tell us your story about your run-in with a serial killer?
So I'm 20 years old, and I've been in my newly adopted home of Costa Rica for less than 48 hours.
Mm.
I'm staying at a very friendly traveler's hostel waiting for my apartment to be ready. And of course, I am socializing with my fellow travelers, all of whom, unlike me, are just passing through. It's like a backpacker place. And these impossibly pretty Dutch girls who were staying across the hall, they met
some
local
boy. Were they on their way to Panama, by the way?
in about 10 years.
Okay.
They met some local boys and they invited us to split taxis and come out to some club that they liked on the outskirts of San Jose. And there's just one other American with us, and his name is, well, let's just call him Dave.
It wasn't Joe, though.
It was not Joe.
Definitely not Joe.
Yeah. No, there's no way it was Joe.
Yeah, good.
So we go to this place, this dance club, this bar, and Dave, as we're calling him, proceeds to get just piss drunk.
Yeah.
And so naturally, it was my job as an American to take care of my fellow American,
Yankee.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Which was fine because I really wasn't into dancing to techno in a sweaty nightclub with the children of Latin America's elite.
Yeah.
Dave, though, being as drunk as he was, kind of opened up to me. He told me he'd been in the military. They taught him to fly. After his service, he worked as a diver on offshore oil rigs. He almost died in an accident. His coworker was not as lucky. He was crushed by a massive cable while Dave watched helpless. Dave left that work, I think probably right after that, and he got his commercial pilot's license. And so,
How old was Dave when you spoke to him?
It's been a long time, but I'm guessing he was in his mid-30s.
Mid-30s, huh?
Interesting. Somewhere in there. And he tells me why he got his pilot's license, and this is where things start to get weird, like really weird. He could use his pilot's license and his job to jump seat. So that's where they leave a seat in the cockpit free for just to have an extra pilot on hand, unpaid but capable of flying a plane if something happens. So he would just fly all over the globe when he had time off, and he liked to go to countries like Thailand because he liked prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked them, and I'm using his words here, young, really young. He didn't ever really say how young, but the way he was stressing it, I didn't really want to know. He's nearly falling off his bar stool at this point, and I should have just walked away, but I didn't. I just let him talk, and he hated that he was a pedophile. He cried right there in the middle of the bar.
So I
called a cab.
He hated it. Yeah. Why didn't he stop doing it then?
I think it was a compulsion, I guess. I don't know. So I load this dude into the taxi. Eventually, I'm just propping him up. And he's crying on, literally crying on my shoulder, like not figuratively. It's actually tears on my shoulder. And I tried to offer him the only comfort I could. I said something like, hey, at least you're not a serial killer or something. And that's what he said. I am. I mean, I killed some. And he starts wailing. We're at the hostel by this point. Outside the hostel by this point. But he says he killed people. And I was scared. Like, I was legitimately afraid of this guy. But he kept talking. He said he didn't know why he'd done it. And at this point, I couldn't help it. I had to ask. I was sick to my stomach. And I said, you mean the girls? He told me that he loved kids and that he would never hurt a child, which was disgustingly ironic. I would have to say that if you patron child sex traffickers, you are hurting children pretty badly.
You kind of are. But yeah.
So he kind of starts rambling incoherently, but what I was able to pick out of it is, I didn't know why or who or where. He didn't seem to be saying that, and I really didn't want to risk upsetting him. But he did tell me that one was a woman and that he'd choked her to death, that he had watched her die, he'd seen her die, and that it got him hard. Those are his words. The rest was nonsense. By this point, I've got him inside the hostel, and I lay him down in his bunk. And I got into my bunk. We were sharing a room that had like four bunk beds in it.
Oh, you were in the same room as the guy?
Dave.
Oh, God.
And so I'm just laying there in my bunk with this little pocket knife, trying not to fall asleep until I heard him start snoring. So I got up and I
grabbed a big rock and he bashed his head in, right?
I kind of feel like I should have, but no. I went out into the lobby of this hostel, and the hostel's security guard was an off-duty San Jose police officer. So this is San Jose, Costa Rica, not California.
Yeah.
His English was pretty limited. My Spanish at the time was pretty limited, but I did my best to tell him what I'd heard, and he seemed to be understanding me.
Mm-hmm.
He told me to keep an eye on the man, and then in the morning he'd do something. I think he said call someone. I spent the night actually not in my bunk, but out in the lobby in a chair, dozing off the animating MTV. I tried to basically stay within the eye line of both the door and the security guard.
Good idea.
And in the morning, I didn't sleep much, but I slept some. And in the morning when I woke up, both Dave and the guard were gone. So this means I had no last name, nothing of interest, nothing I could verify. I had been drinking that night, so my memory was not the most reliable. And Dave was out of his mind, like probably close to alcohol poisoning drunk.
Well, that's a good thing, though, because he probably blacked out and doesn't even remember that he confessed to you. So you're safe.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I mean, I've definitely seen people not as drunk as him who couldn't remember what they did or said the night before. So I was probably safe. I wasn't really worried about my own safety. He didn't know who I was. He didn't know my last name or where I'd be in a couple days. But I never called the cops. I didn't know if the Costa Rican police would do anything.
What later, can I thought, they do? I mean, seriously.
I don't know. Yeah, go looking for a white guy who may or may not be named Dave.
You know, people. I
should contact the embassy, but I didn't know if they'd help.
People get, the fact is, too, is like a couple of things. If he did kill people, you don't know that he did it in the U.S. He probably did it in places like Thailand.
I suspect. What I suspect.
Yeah. Plus, the police can't really take every drunken confession in a bar seriously. I mean, frankly.
Yeah, right.
I mean, people have said all kinds of interesting things to me in bars, you know.
Right.
You wouldn't believe how many, Navy SEAL, Delta Force commandos I've met. There's all kinds of people out there. to say all kinds of absurd things in bars when they're drunk. But anyway, is that the end of your story? You didn't call the police?
I thought about it quite a bit. I mean, I didn't know what to do. So I actually ended up, this is in the days of internet cafes, right? It's not really smartphones and things. So I went to internet cafes and I was kind of, this kind of was actually how I got into true crime a little bit, maybe, is that I was going around looking at websites about uncaught serial killers, trying to see if if there was a match that looked like this guy, but nothing really worked. Like we said, people just say crazy things.
Yeah.
I wonder about Dave to this day.
Yeah.
Because I never heard about anyone matching his description getting caught since. And I do a podcast that touches on these issues, so I try to stay current. And I wonder how many killers like Dave are out there. Not the ones we're looking for, but the ones we don't even know about. Like, if a body is found in a field, is it the product of a one-off crime of passion, perceived necessity, profit, whatever? Or, the way that we assume that most crimes are, right? Somebody close to the victim with ill intent. Or could it be just some rider on the storm who's not been detected by authorities?
Yeah.
It's a really scary thought, right? A killer with full anonymity and thereby complete impunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually, if you wanted to be a serial killer, I'd probably said this before, the best way to do it is to mix up your MO, mm-hmm. I mean, don't leave a pattern for the police to latch onto.
Yeah.
That's probably great way to do it. And then they're not going to form a Joe the Serial Killer task force.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And they should form a Joe the Serial Task Force.
Probably.
So just some facts before we get into Clay the Serial Killer. Authorities estimate that there is anywhere between, this is a big number here, 50 and 2,000 active serial killers who are unidentified in the United States today.
Although I must stress, though, by the way, that the wide variance in that number, 50 to 2,000, means that they don't have a clue.
They don't know.
They don't have a clue.
They really don't know. Yeah, exactly. And different things say different numbers, and there's numbers in between those. But either way, it's not zero. You have to also understand that number excludes predators like Lisk, the Long Island serial killer.
Yeah.
Who's not caught, there's no suspect, but the pattern has been identified. So we know that someone's out there killing people and disposing of their bodies on Long Island. Mm-hmm. So this would not include people like him. It makes you wonder, right? Do they ever slip up? Do they ever pull a Dave and tell somebody?
Probably a lot of them tell somebody right before they kill them,
I mean, like a guy in a bar.
Yeah.
Or talking about that. Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. I have actually we're going to do an episode about this one of these days. Some of them slip up in major stupid ways. I think a lot of them are motivated enough to keep their mouths shut. And that's as I said before, if you don't want to get caught for whatever crime it is, if you just keep your mouth shut and don't tell anybody, you'll probably get away with it. Probably will.
I think so.
So today we're going to be talking about Clay. This is the anonymous serial killer who confessed his heinous crimes live on one of the most popular radio talk shows of all time. Now, before we go any further, let's play the tape. You heard a snippet of it.
So yeah, we're going to play the whole thing. Let's play the tape. It's kind of long.
It is.
I'm going to give you the time code right now. It is
21 minutes, 19 seconds
to skip ahead to if you do not wish to listen to all of it. But I think it's worth listening, and we're going to be talking about details all throughout it. So
it is. It is. I know our listeners, too, are probably very impatient to get back to hearing you and me talk because we're so fascinating. But anyway, here it is. We're going to roll the full tape of the call.
All right. I got a guy on the phone who claims he's been killing prostitutes and he's wondering why he's doing it. So maybe he thinks I have an answer. Is this Ed?
Ed.
You haven't killed any prostitutes?
No, I never said my name was Ed.
Oh.
Sorry.
That's okay.
What name do you use?
You can call me Clay.
Clay?
Clay?
Yes, Clay. Okay, Clay. So what happened? How many prostitutes have you killed?
12.
And you're wondering why you do it?
I have a pretty good idea.
Why? Did your mom beat you? Did your mom spank you?
Was your mom a prostitute?
No, actually nothing like that.
What is it?
I think I just do it for the sense of power.
All right. Do you have sex with them first?
Yes, and...
And then what, you strangle them?
Once.
How else did you kill them?
Well, a few times, actually most times with a hammer.
And where do you do this primarily?
I've done it twice in a parking garage, and then the rest of the times on the side of the road.
And you're from the New Orleans area?
Yes.
And what do you beat them to death with a hammer?
That usually only takes chicks once in this.
Dude, you gotta have a lot of anger in you.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, why do you need to feel so powerful?
He's got some issue with women, but like some shrink's gotta look into it. It's not even worth it. I mean, you might as well just kill yourself. You've killed 15 people. And that means you're heartless. Did you used to kill small animals?
No, I've killed a rat.
Yeah. See, a lot of guys start out killing kittens for some reason.
Yeah, they kill something before they start with humans.
If my kid like killed a kitten or something cute, I'd probably just, you know, figure, well, this is it. They're gonna be serial killers.
Kill them.
Dude, you're a serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And you get away with it, I guess, because they're hookers, and so far nobody's...
Howard.
What?
Is this Howard?
Yeah. Hello? Hello?
I didn't know this was Howard.
Yeah, it's Howard.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've never killed a kitten.
Really?
Never killed any small animals except a rat?
Yeah, rat's okay.
Well...
Rats, I don't mind you killing.
But how'd you kill?
The rat.
Except on his head, I bet.
We had a big flood a couple of years ago, and it's not actually a rat. It's called a nutria rat.
Hmm.
And I clubbed to death. It's got kitchen at my work.
So how old were you when you killed your first woman?
16.
And you must be a powerful kind of guy. Big guy.
I was then.
Right. And when you killed your first one, did you go in there knowing you were going to kill her, or it just sort of happened?
I knew. I really had planned out.
Hmm.
You know, I wanted to do the whole sending clues.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Are you in?
I wanted to baffle people, but it turned out no one noticed for a long time.
Right. Like, you killed her on the side of the road?
Her, that was the parking garage.
Okay. And then what'd you do with the body? You dumped that somewhere?
Yeah, actually. I think she's probably one of the ones they found.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, you were sending clues that you were going to do this?
No, I was not. He
was going to leave, like, a note for the newspapers and, you know.
But you decided not to.
He didn't want to be famous or draw attention to himself. But the problem is...
No, that's what I wanted to do, but...
Oh, but you did, but no one noticed the clues.
I never sent the clues. I never left anything. You know, I wanted to have my own little signature.
Right.
I wanted a thumb paint.
Oh,
with
your
thumb.
Oh, really?
What do you want to do?
Thumb paint with their thumbs.
Thumb paint what, though?
I don't know.
Oh, anything. It was in a comic book a couple of years ago. It just seemed like a good idea.
Like, you take the girl you killed, you dip her thumbs in paint, and then you do, like, a thumb painting?
Yeah.
On a piece of paper?
Yeah.
Now, after you kill somebody, do you play with the body?
Actually, the closest I've ever done to that is I always make sure I pay them, and I make sure they keep their money.
Oh, really?
When they're still alive, but with one of them, I did put the money in a compromising place.
I see.
But that was this one. You know, it had a penis.
Oh,
it was a guy.
Yeah, I didn't know at first.
So do you think the reason you're so angry is because you were abused or something?
No, I wasn't abused, Howard.
Hmm. Where's your family?
You got a wife?
I mean, you got a mom, a dad, a wife, children? You got any of that?
I've got a couple of kids, but I...
No wife.
Not married to the mother.
Mm-hmm. You're a white guy?
Yeah, Howard. That's pretty funny because the only suspect they had when they started finding the bodies was a black police officer.
Oh.
Turns out one of them was associated with them.
Oh, really?
Are you on drugs?
I've done acid a few times.
Hmm. So
but nothing heavy.
So after you killed the first 16-year-old, like you finished.
No, I was 16.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
She was.
All right. So you finish with your sexual gratification, and then you.
Not always. No.
Not always. You don't even want to get laid sometimes.
No, I just...
You just want to kill.
I'm just bored.
Right.
But does the killing sexually satisfy you in some way?
I can't believe Ed McMahon's not laughing.
I've beaten off thinking about it later.
Yeah?
What are you saying?
That's about it.
He's pleasured himself thinking about it later.
Oh, he has. Okay. Now, how far apart are these murders? Like, do you murder and then, like, you feel satisfied for a while?
I don't even understand why I do it, Howard. I don't know if I ever get any satisfaction.
Hmm.
But how
but
often...
Gather Anywhere was the same night.
Really?
You killed two people in the same night?
Yeah, but I went to Mississippi for the second one.
Mm, mm.
So there's no pattern to how many weeks or days between murders?
No.
Are these mostly white chicks or black chicks?
A fair number of them have been black. The transvestite was black.
Is he just some racial motivation here?
No, Howard. They were just, let's just say, Jimmy Swaggertown.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy Swaggertown.
Don't know what that means.
Me neither, but...
That's pretty much the area around here where the prostitutes all hang out.
Oh. I see.
And it's just whoever comes up to you. You don't pick a certain type?
I don't even approach them. I wait for them to approach me, Robin.
Do you ever...
like them asking for it.
Do you ever, like, look into their eyes and go, you know, gee, these people were just children at one point, and maybe they just had a tough life? And...
I've let a couple go.
You have? Like, what happened? You're in the middle of killing them, and then they, what do they say? Why would you let one go and kill the other?
There was this one.
Go ahead.
I think she was probably really new to it.
Yeah.
There was just something about her. Maybe she reminded me of my fiance, but...
Right. You somehow relate...
More of an innocent quality. I just...
You somehow felt bad for her.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And you have a fiance, so you're planning to get married?
No.
He had one, you say.
He had one.
No. If I wouldn't be a suspect, believe me, she'd...
But let me ask you, why'd you let, like, did you start to kill her and then, like, you said, forget it? Or you just never even...
Not even.
You just had sex with her and then you let her go?
I didn't even have sex with her, Howard.
Hmm. Well, that's weird. Now, that's weird.
I mean, you just really felt sorry for
this. I don't know what she was doing what she was doing, but...
Are you a big fat mess?
She got off lucky.
Are you a big fat mess, or are you, like, a fairly good-looking guy?
I'm not a big fat mess. I wouldn't call myself good-looking. I don't know what I'd call myself, Howard.
Right.
Do you have a decent job and all that stuff?
Sounds like a bright guy.
time.
Not decent like you have.
Yeah, well, we got ridiculous jobs. Okay, so you killed your first woman.
When was the last time you killed?
It's been a few months.
Right.
Actually, it's been going on a year.
Hmm.
You're like the Boston Strangler, man. Maybe I should option your story. So what do you think you're going to do? Do you think you're going to kill yourself? Do you think that
Are you going to kill again?
Can you stop this?
If I killed myself, I'd miss the next Batman movie.
Right. You don't want to do that?
No.
As a fan.
Actually, I'd actually kill myself to miss
that. Why would you want to stay for that?
No, but in all seriousness, I mean, do you think that you could control this? Do you think you could stop?
I have been.
Oh, you have been for the last couple of months?
A year he hasn't killed.
Oh, a year?
Yeah.
Almost.
So why do you think you stopped killing all of a sudden?
I really don't know, Howard. Part of it had to do with my car broke down.
Oh, no transportation.
Seriously? That's the reason?
Well, that was the reason for a month, but after that, I guess it was all self-control.
Wow.
But so you don't want to do this anymore?
No, he wants to do it, but he's controlling himself. But you want to kill women, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And what do you like? Do you enjoy seeing them struggle as you kill them?
Actually, none of them really struggle.
Hmm.
Do you hit them from behind, or do they see it coming?
I can't get inside their minds, but let's just say I hit them.
But, I mean, are you facing them?
Yeah.
Well, so you can see their face and everything when you do it.
Yeah. The worst I've ever gotten was one tried to grab my neck. I've never gotten any of the claw marks or anything that are dead giveaways.
Right. You must be very powerful.
I wouldn't call myself powerful. Maybe intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose this method?
I didn't, Robin. Like I told you, I really wanted to cut things off, mail things, send clues.
No, she means why did you use a hammer? Do you think you...
Because it was in a book I read.
Oh.
Well, everything's come from
cartoons.
Somebody
and,
else.
Yeah. When's the last time you got laid?
Last week, Howard.
Oh, yeah. So you didn't kill that girl?
No.
Because she wasn't a hooker?
No.
Right.
It's only hookers, though.
A lot of serial killers are only into hookers because they know, A, probably won't get caught, and B, they have some kind of anger toward hookers. Like, did you think your mom was a hooker or something?
No, Howard.
Hmm.
Your parents married and stay together in the whole thing?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Church-going people?
That'll do it.
Well, one of them, but...
Yeah. Religious fanatics give birth to the most serial killers because they're so repressed.
Yeah.
Mm. So there's no way I'm going to talk you into giving yourself up or anything, right?
No.
I shouldn't even waste my time. I know I'm going to get calls after this, and people are going to go, Howard, how come you didn't catch him?
Has anybody ever been close to catching you?
No. Actually, someone once, when it was in the newspaper, someone joked to me, I know it was you, but they were joking.
Right. You think you might be gay?
I hope not.
Right. Maybe you're a repressed homosexual. Were you ever molested?
No.
Hmm. Do you have a lot of tattoos?
I don't have any tattoos. I wouldn't do that to myself.
Right.
And do you get high before you do that?
I've got pretty drunk before.
Yeah.
The lame-o.
The lame-o.
Relax that sphincter. Well, I gotta say, I wish you would die, but, you know, what can I tell you? I maybe this is sort of good that you're talking about it with me, and maybe it'll keep you under, like maybe I can't get you to
maybe
turn yourself
like
in.
A valve and he'll be able to go another year or something.
Yeah, but maybe somehow, you know, you won't do it anymore.
What about your kids? You want them living in a world with people like you?
It hasn't really analyzed it that
way. I mean,
yeah.
Kind of lonely, though. You can't tell anybody about this.
I'm the only guy you could, am I the only guy you ever told about this?
Yeah.
Hmm. Wow. I guess that's sort of an honor.
I've told a couple of women, Howard, but.
They're dead.
Yeah. Do you tell them first and then you kill them?
Yeah.
What do you say to them? All right, let's
see. Every now and then you can play the running game if you're out in the middle of nowhere, and we got a lot in the middle of nowhere down here.
Right. So, in other words, let's say you're with a woman, right? A hooker.
Yeah, Howard.
And you say to her, okay, honey, you just had sex and everything. What do you say to her to torment her? How do you break the news to her that she's going to die?
It really depends on my mood.
Just give us an example.
Well, if I wanted to, I could just say Baba Booey, but that would be pretty,
No, come on, be serious. What do you say to them?
I say you're going to die.
And then what do they do?
I like to articulate a little more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I ask them if they think it's dangerous doing what they're doing, if they're worried about things, and they'll laugh it off, and that just pisses me off.
Right, and then you go ahead and you kill them.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right, well, there you go.
So there it was, the full biscuit. So, Joe, can you give us some background on who Howard Stern was? Because I got a feeling that there's going to be a number of younger listeners who they may know who Howard Stern is, but may not have realized what a cultural force of nature he was in the 1990s.
Yeah, he was real big in the radio way back then. I even listened to him myself occasionally. I was not a religious Howard Stern listener to listener, but yeah. I still tuned in a fair amount. So he started out small, like a lot of those guys did on smaller radio stations. They all have to, really. This is back in the mid-70s. And he's still around, by the way. He's on Sirius XM radio now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, you know, like a lot of these guys, he struggled at first with the formats of various radio stations and with being a disc jockey. And then he jumped onto the bandwagon of this evolving new format of talk radio, which didn't exist when I was a kid.
Yeah, not really.
became, but then, well, it actually existed some, but it wasn't as huge as it is today. And then,
yeah,
but yeah, on talk radio, the DJs didn't just play music. They would have guests on, and they would have callers calling in to discuss current events or whatever, you know. And over the course of the 80s, this format became pretty huge. It really boomed and was insanely popular, very influential. And it's kind of, you know, kind of reminiscent actually of the podcast boom that we're undergoing right now. I mean, yeah. But of course, as you can imagine, the competition was steep because radio is free. And if you don't like what you hear, it's so easy to switch the dial. Yeah. So this led to a lot of people adopting wilder and wilder antics among hosts and the guests. And Howard was always just, what's the word? Is that step ahead in this regard? I would say. Yeah. And he would do whatever it took. He'd be as outrageous as he could be just to keep you listening. And this wasn't all great. Sometimes it was in a slightly poor taste. You'd make crass comments. He would bring in guests deliberately to stoke anger and controversy. Sometimes he'd bring in disabled people or minorities or hot girls just to basically mock them and exploit them for ratings. Yeah, anyway, so needless to say, Howard Stern was always controversial and very, very popular. And by the end of the 1980s, his local New York City radio broadcast was being syndicated all over the country. And it was available everywhere. I remember it was here in Portland. I can hear it on the radio right here. Mm-hmm. Arguably the most popular radio show in America. So Howard and his co-host, Robin, would devote quite a large amount of the show to callers. And these callers would call in and say all kinds of crazy stuff. And Howard and Robin would hear them out and riff on their stuff, you know, either agree with them or more likely make fun of them, you know. But I never called in, by the way. I should have. Damn it.
That would be some excellent tape if we had that.
I know, so, right?
So let's jump forward to 1997. Howard has withered criticism from people offended by his content. He's had growing pains from a show becoming a huge phenom in the U.S. He expanded into TV a little bit. And in 1997, he starred in a movie about his own life, playing himself, Robin Quivers. His co-host actually played herself, too.
I never saw the movie.
It was a surprise hit, and it was really, honestly, way better than it had any right to be. It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was always, when I saw that it came out, I was just like, Howard, you belong in the radio, you know? And so I just never saw it. But maybe I was, maybe I'm wrong.
That's how I thought it was going to be, but it's actually kind of a touching story about him and his wife. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess what you have to say is that, you know, for this brief moment in the sort of mid late 90s, Howard Stern totally transcended the shock jock label and was legitimately one of the most famous people in America, if not the world.
Oh, yeah. And he's still big. I mean, he just closed a $500 million deal with Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah.
So he's still pretty freaking huge. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Even all these years later. But I think even despite that, Joe, I think it's hard. It's hard to imagine somebody being famous, being a media impresario like he was back then now. I know it's only been 20-something years.
Mm-hmm.
Media I just don't think it really works that way anymore.
Well, let's talk about the story at hand, though, I think. Let's do that.
I just wanted to set the stage. I'm sorry, this is too much preamble, but I just wanted to set the stage about, you know, what is happening when this guy... He's not calling some, like, weird, random AM show at 4 in the morning.
You're calling a nationally syndicated show.
Right.
So, yeah.
So in the midst of calling this massive show, this massive call-in segment, this guy, Clay, as we're coming to know him, confessed to murdering a dozen women. All, or maybe mostly, were sex workers. That's the tape that we heard. But here's the question. Was it real? And if so, who was Clay?
Yeah, I know. The off-air story is a little vague, but apparently, you know, of course they have call screeners, so you don't just call directly in. So the screener... Talked to Clay for a moment, informed the producers that he had a listener on hold named Ed who claimed to have killed prostitutes. And so the producers, of course, thought, hey, this is a live one. They forward the call to Howard Stern. And of course, Stern puts him on the air right then, right? Because, hey,
that's a good one. That's red meat for Stern fans.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, yeah. And so, and then Stern, as you heard on the tape, gets on the phone and says, is this Ed? Ed? And then our caller sounds a little aggravated. He's like,
he sounds disproportionately aggravated by this.
Yeah. He's like, no, I never said my name was Ed. But he's getting a little upset by that. He didn't like being called Ed. But
I get that. Made on live radio, you know, a lot of callers and names can get mixed up.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of people wonder, including myself, if it was just an honest mistake or if he'd given the name Ed, thinking that Ed would not be used on the air. And then he was upset when it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
That could be it. Maybe he said, yeah, well, you know, my name's Ed. And said, oh, yeah, by the way, I don't use my name. And then the screener forgot to mention that, you know, maybe.
Yep.
Yeah, it could be something like that.
Well, who knows? You know, so it ends with the caller saying, you can call me Clay.
Yeah, as you've heard, Clay. Yep. That works. Yeah.
So Stern then asks Clay how many prostitutes he's killed. And Clay fires back without even having to think. 12.
Mm-hmm.
Stern then asks a flurry of questions, but I think he's kind of just trying to trip Clay up. I don't think he believes it. He asks Clay why he kills women, how he kills them, if he has sex with them. He's making jokes like, oh, you don't even want to get laid. It sounds like Stern's show. And the guy is dodgy, but he answers the questions without giving away, you know, incriminating details, but with what seems like real frankness.
Yeah, he seems like a straight shooter, believe it or not. You know, he's pretty straightforward with this stuff. And by the way, I don't recall he's had sex with all these prostitutes before he murders them. I don't recall if he said that he used condoms or not.
That's a good question. No, I don't think he mentioned it.
Yeah.
Stern didn't ask.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, from his point of view, I'd be concerned about that. That's a lot of DNA evidence. But he must have used condoms. I mean, he must have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he does say that there were some he'd never even had sex with. So.
Oh, there's that too.
There's some that he lets go. That I found that.
A few?
That he felt for some of them. But that sounds right, honestly.
Yeah. One of the things that, too, that sort of made me feel, gave him a little more cred in my eyes. But he says it pretty early on in the whole thing, because they say he's asked, did you ever kill animals? Did you start out killing small animals, torturing cats and dogs and stuff like that? And he says, no, never killed anything. I killed a rat once. And, you know, I thought that was kind of cool, because obviously the stereotype is that they all start out killing, you know, pets and things like that. So. So that was interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
And again, he does sound pretty, you know, pretty straight up. And it doesn't sound like he's trying to make it all loaded up with all kinds of lurid details. He's not really. Yeah. If anything, yeah, he kind of makes it sound a little more humdrum than, you know, he doesn't really play it up.
Yeah. So listening to it, I think, you know, they're not really taking him seriously at first.
No.
Because BSers call the Stern Show all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But at some point in there, that all changes. Howard, and that's why I wanted to play the full tape, because I think that's actually really important.
Yeah.
Howard and Robin seem to realize all at once that the call could be real and that the man on the phone may actually be a serial killer. And I think that Howard Stern and Robin Quivers deserve some credit here, because they begin carefully but jovially grilling Clay, trying to get a lead for the authorities. And I think they're pretty smart in the questions they asked.
Oh, actually, the biggest lead of all, of course, is they've got Clay on tape. They've got his voice. You know, his voice. That's a good one. One of the questions they did not ask him that I felt they should have, you know, because, you know, originally he starts out going like, yeah, you know, I wanted to like be the kind of guy that leaves a trail of bodies and sends notes to the police and to the press, taunting them and creating a big story. And which is a great strategy, actually, if you want to be one of the most notorious killers of all time, because that's how Jack the Ripper and Zodiac did it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, they weren't that prolific, but, you know, they're so legendary because of the notes that they sent in.
Yeah.
And the question I would have had for this guy if I had been Howard, it's like, well, that was your plan. Why didn't you go through with it? Why, you know, why didn't you do all the notes and stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
what stopped you?
That's intriguing. I want to know. I want to know what caused you to stop, to not do that. Because, and arguably, of course, sending notes like that is dangerous because you can trip yourself up doing that. You're actually giving them more evidence, more clues, et cetera. But at the same time, it's a much, much safer way to, say, tweak the press and the police than calling a radio show, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I think that would have been an intriguing question to ask. But of course, you know, he didn't have time to think about it and prepare ahead of time, too. So I'm not dissing Howard or Robin.
It would have been cool if they asked that. Like I said, I think they deserve some credit. I think they're actually pretty smart.
Oh, yeah. No, they
do. They ask about his motives. They ask why he kills, what methods he uses. They get him to talk about that, although he is a little dodgy about that. They ask him if he has any tattoos, which is pretty smart. But I think he caught on to what they were doing and he didn't take that bait. There aren't many viable details from the call, which you probably heard. He doesn't really give up much that would incriminate him, except for kind of just one thing. He states very clearly that he's stalking and killing people up and down the I-10 in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't necessarily point to a suspect. It doesn't identify who Clay is, but you could argue that would help connect it to crimes which have been documented.
Yeah, Although, you know, again, the guy maybe wasn't entirely telling the truth, and maybe he was going up and down some freeway in Louisiana or another state, you know?
Yeah, it's
so there's,
say.
There's that too.
Well, I-10's huge, so it's, you know, you could say up and down I-10, but like, are you right off of I-10 or any of the things that connected roadways?
Yeah, there's probably half a dozen serial killers, you know, conducting business on I-10 right now. So, hey, I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
But anyway, the day after the call, the FBI showed up at Stern Studios and collected the audio as evidence.
Did the FBI, were they just happening to be listening to Howard Stern, or did Stern actually call them and say, hey, you might want to hear what we had this guy that called in?
That's a great question, and I have no idea. I don't know if a tip was phoned into the FBI, if FBI agents who, like Stern, heard the broadcast. I don't know, or if Stern's people reached out to the FBI. I really don't know.
I kind of like the idea that the FBI has just permanently got one special agent who does nothing but listen to Howard Stern for clues.
It would be interesting to have a guy who like listens to call-in shows, because there are examples of other killers. There was a who called into like radio shows and stuff. There was a guy who called a radio show. I'm getting out of my depth because I don't have the information in front of me. Back in the 80s, and confessed to a murder. And years later, they were able to connect it to an actual murder in Baltimore. And like, so the radio station was on the other end of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, you know, it would be interesting to have an FBI agent who just, their job is just to listen for this stuff.
Probably not, but
staying up all night listening to Coast to Coast, hoping someone says something weird.
Yeah, but here's what caught the FBI's attention, though, about the phone call after they listened to the tape was this caller reveals information about the murders that the authorities had not made public.
See, now, that's the hitch here.
Well, that's the only thing I know about those. What they said at the time is some of the details the caller talked about were things that only the killer would know. But as far as I know, the only thing that I know about that the killer shouldn't have known was this thing about that there was a cop who was a chief suspect in the murders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and I'm not sure what other details he mentioned. He seemed rather generic, actually. Well, I strangled some, killed the others with a hammer, you know,
That I don't know. They did say that I've found, not from the FBI, public statements of the FBI, but from the New Orleans Police Department saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. And I know the FBI and the New Orleans police were actually collaborating on some of these investigations. So, you know, in the case of like this one particular police officer, I think that investigation, I believe there was some FBI involvement, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, so yeah. We're going to talk about it. There was definitely some serial killing going on in New Orleans at that time, and the New Orleans Police Department and the FBI were looking for at least one serial killer who was operating in an MO that is very similar to Clay, the serial killer.
Yeah. And so there've been, of course, at least a couple of good suspects in that.
So let's take a quick sponsor break.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
Talk about the man who was arrested who may or may not have been Clay, the serial killer.
All right.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
All right, so we're back. We're going to talk about probably the leading theory of who Clay might have been.
Mm-hmm.
That we got to go back to 1991, when a serial killer began claiming victims in the Algiers and Tremé neighborhoods of New Orleans. Did I get that right? Is it Tremé?
Tremé, yeah.
Tremé, okay. And this killer was eventually credited with 24 murders, mostly of prostitutes across the 1990s. And of course, it might have been more than one killer, I suppose, too. But
I think it's very likely that there was more than one killer. There were 24 murders that all kind of are grouped into the same crime, but no one has ever been convicted in all 24 murders.
Yeah, yeah. So who did it? And so shockingly, in 1995, the cops and the FBI kind of homed in on one dude who happened to be a New Orleans police officer. His name was Victor Gant, and he was a suspect in the murders of his girlfriend, Sharon Robinson, who was a casino employee in New Orleans, and also her friend, Karen Iverster, who was allegedly a sex worker of some sort. And so after the first six murders, a composite sketch of the killer was created in 1992 from witness accounts. And it showed a large, muscular African-American man in his 30s, which actually matched Victor Gant's physical description pretty well, actually kind of to a T. Although, you know, again, in fairness to Officer Gant, there's probably a lot of large, muscular 30-ish black guys in New Orleans in the 1990s and today. So, you know.
I think the connection was that he matched the description, and I believe there was a similar MO in the killings as to the murder of Robinson and Iverster.
Mm-hmm,
so that got them looking at Gant.
Mm, yeah, fair enough too. But but of course they never really did snag him, did they?
They never did. No, Gant never did time.
Yeah.
But remember what Clay said about the, I'm using quotes here, black police officer in New Orleans?
Yeah.
We know what skin color Gant had.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I just want to talk a little bit about Gant. This guy, while I don't think that he's necessarily guilty of all 24 of these crimes, he was anything but a good dude.
No. But he actually, in fairness, he might not have been guilty of any murders.
That is possible. Yeah. Let's just to get an idea who Gant was. He was known to be a corrupt cop. He had a record of violence on and off the job. And I strongly suspect that he's guilty of at least one murder, probably two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that's suspect here because Gant was never arrested and never tried. Details of the investigation into Gant, I think because he's a police officer or was a police officer, were never made public. What they had on him, I don't know. He was publicly announced as a suspect in the killing.
When was this?
Later, I think in the late 90s.
Yeah, this is well after the phone call because this was a thing that the FBI said was not known to the public in general, correct?
Yeah. So this came out definitely after the phone call. So this is one of the holdback information about it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah,
just to, I guess out of caution or whatever, Gant was stuck behind a desk and he remained there for years. They didn't let him out in the field anymore. But in Gant's defense, he was not known to be hostile to the investigation. He willingly submitted blood and tissue samples for the investigation. But the results of that testing, which I apparently have been done, they've never been released.
Yeah. Well, it might be that he was not guilty of being a serial killer. I could think of a couple of possibilities, one of which he didn't kill anybody. Mm-hmm. Another possibility is that he was highly motivated to kill, say, someone like his ex-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And being a policeman, he knew that there was a serial killer at work. So he thought, hey, I know, I'll be clever about it. I'm going to off her and I'm going to make it look like it was the work of this serial killer. It's just another one of his victims. And of course, and that's a clever thing to do. But the problem is the flip side of that is that if you become a suspect in this one murder, you become a suspect in all the murders.
True.
So, you know, and so it's very possible that he truly was not a serial killer.
I don't think he was. I think he may have. I think there's a likelihood that he maybe murdered someone, but I don't think he was responsible for all of these prostitute slangs that were going on in New Orleans in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Probably not. Yeah,
I think he matched the description. I think whatever he did, or at least was suspected of doing, matched the MO, and they zeroed in on him. But again, we don't know anything about this investigation, so we don't know. They could have damning evidence that just never was enough to bring to trial, or maybe they were like, "Yeah, this guy didn't. He's clearly not our guy."
Yeah,
I honestly have no idea.
It's hard to say. I mean, being a cop, he would know how to, you know, avoid leaving incriminating evidence, probably too. Yeah. So who knows?
I think he did know that.
Yeah.
But for our intents and purposes, in 1997, Clay, the serial killer, told Howard Stern that the main suspect was this black police officer, and that had never been released. It was not information they'd made available to the public. Gant had been quietly put behind a desk at this point. Mm-hmm. It had not been in the papers, and somehow Clay knew about it.
Well, yeah, and I suspect that If Clay truly was a serial killer, he'd have no more clue about Gant than any of the rest of us. So, which makes me wonder if Clay was perhaps a cop.
Well, you know? What I wondered about Clay, I like that theory and I want to talk more about it.
Yeah.
Just please hold that thought. What I thought about it possibly might be that if the New Orleans police had brought Clay in and embraced him, if he was a suspect and they had talked to him and done an interview with him, could he have learned about Victor Gant through a loose-lipped police detective?
Mm-hmm.
That was a thought I had about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we'll talk about, like, could it have been a cop calling Howard Stern? I really want to get to that. But first, I want to talk about Russell Elwood, if that's okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Russell, too. Let's talk about Russell. Who was the murderer who called Howard Stern? A lot of folks think that it might have been Russell Elwood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Russell Elwood, famous serial killer, maybe.
He's not that famous, but he's definitely a serial killer.
Yeah, but was he really Clay the serial killer? Good question. Guy was arrested in 1998 and tried for a couple of murders, 1993 murders of Cheryl Lewis and Dolores Mack. And the court found Elwood guilty of the murder of Cheryl Lewis, but not Mack. New Orleans PD stated that Elwood was thought to be responsible for as many as 15 murders in the New Orleans area. And they thought that he might just be responsible for many, many more. But remember, they maybe didn't know about every murder. Sometimes bodies don't turn up.
That's true.
Sometimes they bury them a little extra deep or whatever, and they just don't get found. Mm-hmm. So Elwood had worked for a while as a freelance photographer.
So not a lot is known about Elwood's life. I really tried to get some biographical details on the guy, and I really couldn't find much. Elwood had worked for a while as a freelance photographer in New Orleans and as a cab driver. Elwood would live in his car from time to time and was functionally homeless.
Hmm.
In 1993, he took the life of his first confirmed victim, Cheryl Lewis, by drugging her and then drowning her in a canal, one of those canals I got in New Orleans. Lewis's murder kicked off a series of killings, which may have resulted in at least 26 prostitutes spanning from 1991 till 96. Dense murder rate. That's according to authorities. Elwood has not confessed to this. He's not been tried for any of this stuff. And there are those out there who suspect that the New Orleans Police Department wanted to pin some of these deaths on him so they didn't have to investigate the murder of prostitutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they want to focus their time elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, clearing as many cases as you possibly can. What's good for your career, you know? So, yeah, it would make sense.
So remember, he was not tried for anything but the two killings, one of which he was acquitted from. But I think the thinking around New Orleans, even today, is that he was responsible for at least some of the murders in that time period.
Mm-hmm.
He was found guilty of second degree murder on August the 17th, 1999. And he was sentenced to, and I love this quote, it's a very Louisiana quote from the judge. Yeah. Life in prison and hard labor without benefit of parole, probation, or suspension of sentence.
Oh, nice. I still prefer, like, you know, you are to go to the gallows and be hanged by the neck until dead. I've always liked that one. And also,
dead.
Yes, or I'm sending you off to the the asylum for the criminally insane. I like that one too.
I like that one too. Yeah,
yeah,
you
that's
aren't
a good
in the asylum.
but here's the question: was it really Elwood that called Harold Stern?
I don't know.
We don't know this, do we? Yeah,
I really don't know. Some people are really sure that it was. I'm really skeptical, but I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah.
So one of the few things I know about Elwood is that he's from New Orleans. He was born there.
Yeah.
But was the caller from New Orleans.
He didn't sound that, did he?
Yeah, he didn't really.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that there is an accent within New Orleans a lot of people might mistake for being from Brooklyn. See, not everyone in Nolens talks like a Tennessee Williams character. There's this whole accent called Yat. It's just sort of an abbreviation of where you at. Well, yeah, sounds a lot like Clay. But, you know, is that how Elwood talks? I don't know. I couldn't find Elwood. No one's ever interviewed him like on tape that I can find.
Well, I think that this is one of the reasons I don't think it was Elwood is because the police could have actually just listened to the tape. I'm sure there's many police officers there that have spent many hours interviewing Elwood and probably know exactly what his voice sounds like. You don't even need to get out the fancy voice comparison, you know, computerized stuff, you know, just tell, you know, that it's his voice or not, you know, so.
And if you read I didn't put it in the script, Joe, but if you read between the lines of our episode, one thing you may discern that I will make clear now is they never use the Stern call as any type of evidence in any type of anything, and they don't talk about it.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anybody in the police department in connection with Elwood or Gant or anyone else saying, oh, yeah, but then the Stern tape, Mm-hmm. They don't bring it up. It is not evidence. It's just a random to them. It does not factor into the case. It's just a random call on a radio show.
Mm-hmm. Well, you never know. It might wind up factoring into a case one of these days. You never know.
Well, I wonder about that because of the way that they have chosen not to use it. They may. I have a theory that they may be holding that for a different. There may be a guy they like for it and that they think is the guy, but they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to taint that evidence. They don't want to get it tied up in Elwood or anyone else and then have that possibly be exculpatory down the road.
So Clay, what's the deal with Clay? Was he real or not? Was he the real deal? What do you think?
I'm very on the fence.
Yeah,
I feel like, so just to, you know, show my cards, I feel like his confidence, his ability to answer clearly, and then especially, you know, you understand true crime was not in 1997 was not what it is today. His ability to manifest what if he was lying was a character is really impressive. Not impossible, but is certainly impressive. And I think that while I can definitely say it's a hard I don't know for me, it's a firm got no clue. I would keep an open mind that there could be some legitimacy there.
Yeah, there are some theories out there. And one of the more popular ones is that this guy might have been a friend of Victor Gant's and was perhaps trying to help Gant out by basically calling in and confessing to the crimes at Gant. And, you know, he went out of his way to tie it into Gant's crime that he was accused of and say, nope, I'm the one who did it. And there, you know, and so that's been floated as a possibility.
And then you do have to wonder if Gant was never put on trial for any of these other slayings, that if he had been, would his defense have been like, look, another guy confessed, just because you couldn't catch him doesn't mean that he's not the guy.
Yeah, I don't know if that would have been admissible or not. I'm sure the defense would have thrown that at the jury if the court let them.
If the court let them, and who knows if it would be or not.
Yeah, but I think there's another possibility. I don't know if anybody's floated this one or not, but maybe Clay wasn't actually trying to help Gant. Maybe he was actually trying to out Gant. Because remember, this had been kept secret by the NOPD for all that time. Maybe that's the whole purpose of this call, was to out the NOPD and Gant. Like, for example, perhaps this is one of a range of possibilities here. Perhaps a reporter had heard from a source in the NOPD about Gant being the suspect in some killings. But he was sworn to secrecy, and he couldn't just publish a story about it because that would have put his source at risk. So what's the best thing to do here? Maybe call Howard Stern, or have a friend of yours call Howard Stern.
The biggest radio show in the world.
Exactly. And just talk about your serial killeriness and all that good stuff. And then talk about this black New Orleans police officer who's a major suspect. And now, as a reporter, you have a total in. You can ask that question now. You can totally go to the mat and out Victor Gant, out the NOPD for covering up that fact, et cetera. You know, so that's a possibility, I think.
I think so. I think whatever it is, if it's not that Clay is a literal serial killer who has committed these crimes, maybe even we know what crimes they are, this cluster of murdered sex workers in New Orleans around that time in the 90s. If it's not the real genuine article, I think that I like what you have to say, Joe, because I think there's, when you think about the size of Howard Stern, if there is some malarkey at play, I think that getting a megaphone that big was behind whatever motivation, whether it was a prankster or someone trying to out Gant or exonerate Gant or something like that. The absolute size of that. Because, like, okay, think about it, right? Like, let's say that you are worried that your friend and fellow police officer is going to go to trial, right? And you're going to say, well, I'm going to call into a radio show and, you know, basically confess to being a serial killer to give reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
Well, they might be able to say it's inadmissible in court. So where do you want to call? The most popular friggin' radio show that everyone listens to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could at least taint the jury pool. I mean, I think that, so even if Clay was not the real deal, and I tend to think that Clay was probably not the real deal, because the risk was just too fantastically great. If he was really a serial killer and somebody recognized his voice, it's game over.
True.
I tend to think that he was not the real deal, but even so, it's that doesn't mean there isn't an interesting little story about something going on here. Could be there was also some stuff. Again, the FBI was cooperating with the NOPD on some of these investigations of serial killers. And I know that the FBI at some point actually came to the point where they were actually pulling out of the investigation because they didn't trust the NOPD in the way they were handling things.
Mm-hmm.
And so this could be actually sort of the end result of a little bureaucratic infighting between, say, the FBI and the NOPD.
I like that theory.
All sorts of intriguing possibilities here. Of course, it's all speculation on our part.
But, and it could just be a silly prank, but I'm with you. I feel like that even if Clay is not the genuine article, that there was something afoot. There was something going on.
Yeah, there is a backstory here that's intriguing. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know. So much for Clay. And by the way, Clay, if you're still out there, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, call in. You can do a follow-up, a part two on the shocking details.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
Now he's moved on to the world of satellite radio. You can move on to the world of podcasting.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell us. As you know, I'm a very good person for psychos to talk to.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. That's it. Another mystery solved. I guess it's time to give people some pertinent information about how to get a hold of us and such.
Yes.
Of course.
The dulcet tones of Tess Carter will tell you our email address and our social media.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And please get in touch. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you think.
Absolutely.
Clay was real. Let us know. Cause I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
And of course, if you're Howard Stern and you would like an internship, it's unpaid, of course, but send us an email.
Yes, Howard, we can't pay you, but we would love to have you on our staff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right. Yeah.
Can work for it. And also don't forget to leave us a rating and a review.
Oh, totally. Totally.
I'm sure a lot of you have, but just remember, it only takes 10 seconds. You don't have to write a novel about our podcast, but it really helps other people connect with the show.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing, right? Have people grow the podcast. Keeps us rolling.
That's right. Okay. All right, kids. So that's it until next week. How do they say it in New Orleans? Goodbye. Is that what they say?
Goodbye. Yeah. They probably just say goodbye. Yeah.
Goodbye.
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Sure. Get out of here. Get out. All right.
Get out of here.
All right. Cool. Next week. Bye.
Bye.
The shocking details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Okay, now theme song. Shocking details.
All right.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.